Hello, Screeters. So here we go. We have another random journaling episode. I hope you guys enjoy them. I haven't had a ton of feedback one way or the other. People are listening. I guess that means something. I think as the winter nears its end, and it's been a year of COVID now, I'm not surprised that I'm hearing a lot of people being in a depressed state. But hope shines everlasting if you let it. So enjoy. Let me know what you think. And we'll keep it going till we stop.
If he is up or down, his podcast still comes round. Hobbs is in his van, don't turn off that sat nav, man. Random screed, don't know what you get, but it's what you need.
Thursday morning, February 18th, just getting the day started, cruising in the van, headed off to work. I got a couple things. So I did the Librem Society last night. There were, I don't know, around 10 or 12 people hanging out in the audience, and people had some questions and some comments, and all I got through is chapter one. I'm not surprised. It's a pretty deep, dense book, and I'm really trying to do it justice. And I don't know anything about book reviews or book clubs. I've never done any of them. All I know is I want to talk about these books and get feedback on my thoughts on the books. That's all I know. And so that's what I'm trying to do. It's definitely a work in progress. Arlen wasn't there, like I said. So I think there is value in having another person to, you know, bounce back and forth on. I mean, I didn't get home until 5:30. The show was supposed to start at 6:30. I wanted to create some solo overlays for OBS instead of just all the two people overlays I had set up. Heidi had made spaghetti, which is like my favorite. It's so good. If that's all there was to eat, I'd weigh 500 pounds because I always take more than I should. But I didn't actually have time to hang out and talk. I took it up and continued to work on stuff. She was on the phone anyway. I don't know with who. It's always heartbreaking to me to hear her laugh and enjoy a phone call. I think I've talked about this before, because she never really seems that happy, unless maybe she's interacting with someone else. But that's always easier when you think about it, isn't it? I really think she has depression, though she's never tried to find out or anything if she has. She's always been pretty sad. Even way before this, like when I met her, she was a constantly sad person. And that was always my self-decided goal, to cheer her up or make her laugh if I could. And I think that went on for a long time in our relationship. And then my own methods just wore it all down. It would be a lot different now, I think, with the routine that I have. But sometimes you just can't let go of things. The person I was talking to yesterday would say you have to re-earn trust. But I don't believe you can re-earn anything unless the person actually forgives you. It's one thing to accept an apology. It's a whole other thing to forgive. I've felt multiple times that actually accepting apology equals forgiveness, and that you should be able to breathe easy and feel like, you know, your relationship's good to go and all that, but maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't really know. Maybe I'm thinking of it the wrong way, and it's probably because I'm constantly the person on the side that has to give apologies and is looking for forgiveness because he's such a jackwad person that he's constantly hurting people. I'm hurt a lot too, but I feel like it's usually my own fault, or I have to recognize that it doesn't matter what the other person does. I have to decide how I want to react to being hurt. And over the period of my life, I've not done a good job at that. No, not even close. Don't even begin to think that's what I'm trying to say. This is more of a new Hobbes living process where trying to recognize the way to actually traverse the obstacles in the days to get through them. I didn't mean to make this another Heidi thing. What I really wanted to do is say that I fought through it. I actually had a total blast doing the show, the Librem Society episode number one. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if it's really anything anyone else is interested in. You know, we'll see. I just felt that it was really important. I had said that I was going to, you know, do the show at 6:30 Central on Wednesday, and it just didn't seem like it was the right time to bail, even though it's a legitimate reason to bail, right? Arlen's power was out. It's freezing in his house. He can't take his PC somewhere else and do the show. So, I mean, it's about as legitimate as it gets. But that, I don't think that matters. I don't. When you're trying to create something like a podcast or a live show, the consistency is so very important to success, whatever that success is. And I mean, maybe I should look into that. It has always been my advice that people are doing podcasts or shows or whatever, they should recognize what it is they're trying to do and do everything you can to do that, as opposed to trying to be everything or being wishy-washy or whatever. And I think I kind of know what it is I'm trying to do, but that doesn't mean I necessarily know who my audience is. Because is my audience just other people who are fans of Malazan? Is it people that are fans of my brand that I want to enjoy Malazan with? I don't know. Those are some things that maybe I should write out and figure out. Anyway, I did the show. It's done. You can find it. You can check it out. The live recording is already up on YouTube. The data is off to the editor, and he said he should probably have it done today, so maybe I'll release a podcast tomorrow. But I have to remember and relearn all the things that you have to do to actually release a podcast that isn't on Anchor. And it's there's a few hoops you have to jump through. I'm not excited about doing that, but it is what it is. I did it. I did episode one. Let's move on to episode two. I'm going to have Forrest Aguirre be our guest, and we're going to talk about The Hollow Land by William Morris.
Yay!
It's still morning. I wanted to mention that I got some really nice feedback from the second episode of Journaling, the hybrid I did last episode. A listener sent me a pretty personal message, and I really appreciate it. basically, I guess I should look, go back and listen to the last episode, because he seemed, this listener seemed very intent on making sure I had recognized that I wasn't failing, and that the only way you can fail is to give up, right? The only way you can fail is not to stick around and do your job. So the rest of it is gravy, and it's just making our way through those obstacles, like I mentioned previously. So I wanted to thank that listener. Thank you very much. And thank you for the heartfelt message. And I will try to take it within and keep it going. So after the episode last night of the Librem Society, I had my game The Night Below Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, where I play an elf named Alanian Elenden. His backstory is a bit of a mystery, not just in game canon, but even in my head. He is a savage elf, is like his culture, his kit, and then he is an earth elementalist. So a savage earth savage elf earth elementalist, which is pretty interesting. I mean, he's well on his way to 7th level experience-wise, but we're playing The Night Below, so we have to do all this training thing, which creates these stops in between the action. It maybe slows down the leveling. In the session was right after I finished, obviously, recording the Librem Society, and there was a certain sort of, I don't know, exuberance or exhilaration for getting the episode out and doing it, even though, you know, I was doing it by myself and I had a lot of anxiety about it. But I've really tried to commit to the games that I've been in. I mean, this was session 93 or 97 or something, he said. And when I'm there, especially in a night like last night, I really felt like I kind of dominated play. Whenever I apologize and ask the other players and the GM if that's the case, they don't seem, they always say, no, it was perfect. And I think it does kind of shift around, but we're trying to hunt down a Bulet. I've always said Bulet, I've heard Boulet, I've heard all sorts of things, but previously we killed one in this area that attacked us. It attacked us while we were in camp. It was a random encounter, and we killed it, and then we went off to do our stuff, and then we found out that another Bule, larger than the one we killed, was around, and it's now running rampant, killing one of the major NPCs that we knew, an ally, and now we've decided that, you know, we're the reason that it's in a rampage. So we have to try to take care of it. We're kind of a heroic group, relatively, I guess. So that was an interesting session. We had found the spot that we had last known of its whereabouts and searched around. And then a group of a large group of hobgoblins came through. And my character pretty much chased them down single-handedly. I don't know what there was, 20 or 30 of them or something. And found out that it was chasing them, and so they were purposely trying to draw it to this homestead that we were at, and so that made it easier for us. We didn't have to hunt it, you know, we could trap it. And so then the rest of the session, which is only a 2-hour session, by the way, on Wednesday nights, we were planning on how we were going to try and take on this Bulet. You know, giant caltrops, snare spells, elevation. It was all sorts of interesting things that the GM could tap into, like Jaws, which is one of his inspirations for this scenario. Tremors, another inspiration. So, you know, like setting up fence posts and jiggling cans and things like that, so maybe we can track it or know when it's coming. How are we going to keep it out of the ground so we can deal with it? We didn't have any giant yellow barrels of gasoline or anything we could throw inside it to explode. If we could have come up with something like that, the glee on Kevin's face would have been a shining beacon of his joy. But it was an interesting session, but I guess my concern with it was I felt like I did 90% of everything. I don't know. A lot of times, see, I fall into this habit. I either do too much or I don't do enough because of a concern for doing too much and not giving the other people enough time to play. So I don't really know what the answer is to that. And I try to use my words to communicate with other people and make sure it isn't the case. But even when they assure me that I haven't done anything wrong or dominated play, I still can't shake the feeling because I am obstinate in every way that makes me think I'm a worse person. So that's where that is. So I think that's it for now. Evening, early evening now. I'm on my way home from work. I gotta hit the bank. I got one more call. I'm gonna eat, hang out briefly, probably watch some New Girl. I'm trying to get that finished. Heidi is unwilling to stop watching New Girl and start watching WandaVision. I think she likes to be able to watch them at her own speed, so she doesn't want to have to wait. Which, you know, I can dig it. New Girl's good anyway. I just like to mix it up sometimes when you're talking about like a 9-season show and not watching anything else. But what I really wanted to talk about is it looks like, as you guys know, I put the North March on hiatus and I was waffling on playing something or taking the day off or what. But Robert Nemeth, No Labert fame, is going to run Five Torches Deep tonight and I think next week. And it's just hard for me not to do that. I don't really have to do anything other than pick a character and get after it. So I've never played Five Torches Deep. I want to check it out. I want to get No Labert on Hobbs and Friends and discuss Five Torches Deep. And by playing it, that really is going to enhance that. So looking forward to it tonight. I'll let you guys know tomorrow how it goes. I feel okay. I'm all right. I'm not terrible. I'm not great. I'm okay. I feel a little harried, you know, just like a little bit in a hurry. I'm mostly caught up with pretty much everything that I wanted to be, but I got a pretty big week. I mean, tomorrow I'm playing Eberron Blue Sky Mine. I guess it's totally inspired by Midnight Oil and the song of the titular title song there, Blue Sky Mine. I'm playing an orcish bard. So I guess he's modeled after the lead singer of Midnight Oil. So maybe I just need to jam some Midnight Oil for a couple days and I'll be ready to roll. We're kind of off the beaten path, it seems, for this Eberron game. So I may try to find my Eberron book and look into it a little bit and see if that helps. But I'm not sure it's necessary. Kevin usually does a pretty expansive. If it's a 4-hour game, he's going to spend an hour maybe trying to get us into the area and the location. And I'm cool with that. I mean, it does seem to knock back and doesn't give us as much time as he's even prepared for most of the time. But, you know, give and take, my friends. Give and take. It's Friday. Good morning, streeters. friends, believers. What do I got to talk about today? I guess last night was the Thursday night game that I was running the North Marches with BSers, which is the fans of the Gaming and BS show. I decided to take a hiatus from that to try and get some other stuff done. I didn't get anything done, but I got to play in a Five Torches Deep game. So Five Torches Deep is one of those, let's try and make 5e a little more OSR. So I never had the rule book, but I guess it's printed in Landscape, and it's only 48 pages long. The expectation you're coming to the game with knowledge about gaming, but then I guess it has some stuff in there about what ability scores are and some other things, which, I don't know, seems a little bit counterintuitive if your theme is you've come to gaming already knowing about gaming. But sometimes you do have to explain those things because different systems may have slightly different definitions of even attributes, right? So I can't really make a huge commentary on the way the system was written because I don't have the book. I don't even have a PDF. All I was doing was playing. And as far as that goes, playing is playing. You just do your thing in that situation and have the GM tell you what is up, what you need to do, what you need to roll, what is possible, what isn't, and what is impossible, and how you might be able to achieve it anyway. Oh boy, fuel level low. So, how did it go overall? The thing I want to talk about most is default characters in one or two shot games and what you end up defaulting to and that what that says about you maybe as a player. So lately in these games I've found all I really want to do is mess around and joke around with the other players through our characters. And not always joke around, maybe it's more serious than that, but it's role-playing the characters and interacting with each other. Now that seems really weird to me. But I mean, that's what happened the last time when I played Eldritch Tales with like Colin, John Large. And I don't remember who the other player was. But most of the time it seemed like all we wanted to do was kind of role play, and almost every one shot that Kevin Madison does on the Dungeon Muser, it's the same thing. I wonder if it isn't like a way to get to know the characters a little bit more so you can feel like you're engaging. It's almost easier to engage with the other players through your characters than it is maybe to engage with the story. I don't know if that's totally true, but and I definitely do it more with people I know versus people I don't know. And that leads me to my next point. Why are my characters always kind of inept, sniveling annoyances, or otherwise annoying? Why? And I don't plan it ahead of time. I don't have these plans to make them so beforehand, but whenever I start playing them, that seems to be the norm the last year or so, and I don't know why that is. What's that say about me is that I want to always play these foil characters through interaction are kind of annoying. I mean, they're not inept during play, a little bit sometimes, sowing a little confusion and causing problems through their ineptitude, and somehow I get a real kick out of accidentally causing non-lethal harm to other party members. And I have no idea why. I don't understand what the hell is going on, but it's something that I think I want to try to figure out.
Hey, Hobbs. Che, I just wanted to say thank you for the second journal screed hybrid. Did enjoy it. And I think there's plenty of room for journal with call-ins. Although, to be honest with you, that's exactly how I did the DM's diary. So I don't know that it's much of a hybrid. You know, I think it's just you doing your thing. And just maybe you're doing it a little bit more consistently if you try and record daily. Anyway, there was one thing in there I wanted to comment on, which was you were talking about two conflicting beliefs. I can't even remember what they were, but you had these two conflicting beliefs and you're like, I'm not sure I believe one more than the other. And I think I wanted to reflect back that one of the things my therapist has been getting me to think about is the percentage of belief that I have for each of those two things. So often it's not a dichotomy of I believe one or the other. It's actually that I can believe two very contradictory things at the same time. And that's okay. The question is, how much do I believe them on a scale of 0 to 100? That's a useful thing to ponder. Cheers, man. Game on.
Does anyone feel like Che should be paying his therapist more because he's shifting all of the knowledge that he's given from the therapist and pushing it out to the rest of us? No, buddy. I think it's a good thing. And yeah, that's it's an interesting way of looking at it. And so maybe it helps you not be so conflicted by acknowledging it is what it is. This is how I feel. Maybe I want to do some research to figure out more about it. Maybe I don't. Maybe I'm okay with feeling it. I kind of wonder, though, does it have to be the sliding scale where only 100% is maximum? And then, you know, if you believe 30% of this, then you must believe 70% of that? Or is it just like you're just stacking weights on it? Yeah, I got about 100 pounds into this idea. Only about 20 pounds into this one. Or like, I really think this is important, but there is merit to this thought as well, even though they may be conflicting thoughts. I don't know. It sort of reminds me of Pendragon with its, you know, you have your regular statistics or attribute ability scores like strength, wisdom, con, dexterity, you know. I don't know if I don't think it's your standard six, but those things exist. But then you have these other demeanor type things where there's 10 or 12 of them, and they're like this scale that you only have so much of. Like one is honor and one is deceit or something. Those aren't necessarily accurate, but and then you decide they go up to 18 or 20 or whatever, and then you, when you get to certain points, depending on what you're trying to do, like, I don't know, I'm not explaining it very well, but I only played it the one time, so I had about 3 hours looking at the character sheet, and that's the extent of my knowledge. But my understanding is if you're playing, say, Saxon, that on this list they have certain things, and if you get those things to 16, then you've made some kind of accomplishment, like you've become a true Saxon. Like there must be some ideologies that once you become them, then your character is a believer in those ideologies or something. I don't know. And I definitely have gotten off on a tangent. Regardless, Che, thanks for calling in, buddy. Thanks for the support and further knowledge from your therapist. It's time for Che's therapist. You could call in once a week or so. We could just make it a part of the show. I'm just kidding, buddy. Thanks for calling in. With that, we're signing off with this random journal.